Northern Brewer is the proud sponsor of the Brewing Network's Jameel Show. They have the widest selection of domestic and imported malts and grain, hops from all over the world, and a full line of liquid and dry yeast. No matter what style of beer you're brewing, Northern Brewer has the ingredients you need, plus fast shipping and expert staff to help you make the best beer possible. Please visit northernbrewer.com for all things homebrew. The Brewing Network is proud to present Beer Radio that turns ordinary homebrew into award-winning beer. The Jameel Show. And now, your hosts, Jameel Zainasheff and John Plisse.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Hey, howdy, hey.
Here we are.
Yeah, we're back. We're back.
What the hell happened?
That's the weird. Well, here's the thing. We ended the shows. We're done.
We're over.
Finished up. We were done with what we're doing, and then there was a lot of crying.
There was a lot of complaining.
There was a lot of emailing. A lot of pulling of the hair and gnashing of the teeth and rending of the clothing and all that stuff.
Right.
And mostly from you.
Well, yeah.
Enough about me. Some of the listeners actually cared too.
Yeah, they actually listened and
yeah.
They were sad to see it leave.
And some of them were like, whoa.
Yeah.
First off, a number of them took us up on the offer to redo the cider show.
Which was probably a good idea.
Right. Yeah, we have a really good guest, Gary Oddy, who's going to talk about ciders. Yeah, we're gonna put out a great show like the Mead Show was,
which
the cider folks asked. And then, after we do this one, we're going to have a couple others. We're going to do, for those of you listening live, we're going to do Australian Sparkling Ale.
Yeah.
And then we're going to do Malt Liquor.
Yeah.
Malt Liquor one begins. Is because, like Justin, you know... has some debt he needs to pay off or something, you know, not
a little IOU.
Yeah.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do.
Exactly. So, you know, the man says, you know, jump. We say how high. There you go. Well, and it brought up a whole nother thing, which was, more than a few people don't want to see the Jameel Show end.
Okay.
So what do we do? Yeah, we had already said goodbye. But here's the thing. The Jameel Show is going to be reborn.
Uh-oh.
Going to be reborn. We're going to be doing the Jameel Show, Can You Brew It?
Nice.
This is going to be kind of the beer challenge. We noticed that we all get a lot of requests from people.
Sure.
You know, I'm sure you get people all the time asking you, hey, you know, John, how do I make, you know, my favorite beer? How do I make Mirror Pond? How do I make,
Stout.
Old English 800.
Oh, yeah. I know. Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So... we thought, hey, you know, what would be better than a chance to, try and, you know, satisfy those requests? And we'll go in and we'll talk about the different beers, we'll talk to the breweries. We'll formulate a recipe with or without the brewery's help. If they'll help, that's great. If they won't help,
move on.
We'll brew the beers.
Ooh.
And we'll taste them side by side. Yeah, we'll see if we can do it.
Fun.
Can we brew it?
I think our first one should be a malt liquor.
Right. Well, and there you go. So we got Tasty/Juicy McDole is going to be there. He's going to co-host this thing.
Nice.
What about Chad? I'll be there and making the beers.
He's going to be there, and what we'll do is we'll hunt down whatever the beers people will send in requests.
Yeah.
And we got an email address for that yet?
juicy at?
Of course not. That would have required forethought on my part.
Like, we're going to do something like, can you brew it at thebrewingnetwork.com?
What do you want it to be? I'll make it right now. I'll do it while you're speaking.
Juicy.
Can it be tasty juicy?
No.
Tasty juicy at the Brewing Network.
Yeah, we can just do Can You Brew It, right?
I like Can You Brew It.
At thebrewingnetwork.com. So what do you think, Mike?
I think it's going to be a lot of fun because we're going to probably give enough information that people will be able to themselves make pretty good versions of these really good beers, and it's going to be pretty exciting, I think.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you a little secret. I've already started on beer one.
We're actually going to get to try some of your beer?
Which means Tasty's already a slacker.
Yeah. You're behind.
In this new program.
Before this thing shows over, I'll be known as the slacker. you'll get to that really quick.
Right. Yeah. So, I've already brewed a Moose Drool clone. Moose Drool.
Nice.
Good beer.
Nice.
Talk to the brewer. And actually, Chris White came over, and he was there, too.
He was there too. Where? I don't know.
My place.
Oh yeah,
brewing some beer.
Wow,
great.
I heard that. Watching you brew.
It didn't take 5,000 vials neither. Came over, had some of my pulled pork.
Yeah,
he enjoyed my pulled pork.
I'm sure he did.
But did he enjoy your beer? He's a harsh beer critic. Chris White is.
You know, I think we went all commercial. We start off with some Moose Drool, of course.
Yeah.
And then we were like drinking some Rauch beers brought back from Germany and stuff like that. So,
he didn't get into your cellar at all, huh?
Nah, I showed it to him, but
nobody.
Nobody asked. You got to ask. I'm not going to offer. You got
to
ask.
But you're the host. You're supposed to like.
No.
Share.
Please.
Okay.
But we'll be kind of revamping the whole thing.
Okay.
And
sweet,
you know.
So does it mean you guys are brewing every week?
No.
Oh, okay. Once a month.
It means you're brewing every week.
No.
We're gonna have some associate brewers.
I mean, Chad's brewing every week.
He is one of those. Yes.
Okay. Good. Huh? What about Justin? Is he brewing?
I think so. I tell you this: if Justin can brew it, then certainly all our listeners can.
Yeah, I got put on the list of brewers to help. And I was kind of flattered by that until Jay-Z added the caveat that it's like, well, yeah, because if you can brew it, anybody can. And that it's proof that we've done it right.
Right. It's like foolproof.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
No sanitation required, huh? That beer.
Sanitation required.
Exactly.
just
the recipe is so good, you don't even have to clean.
Exactly.
It's like a brew-off.
Yeah.
Wow. That's cool. It's a good idea.
Yeah. I think we're going to have a great time doing it. I think, this way we're continuing on, Mr. Police A.
Okay. It's almost like fantasy beer. Like, you should have, like, a best of over a course of a year in, like, top three wins and points. What do you think?
Yeah. I think that's quite
well,
the
sure.
Bad.
We're open to everything.
Yeah, okay. Sorry.
But I think we're going to have some fun with this.
Absolutely. Let's brew.
And drink.
Sorry, drink. The Mickey's is kicking in already.
Yeah, so. he's already cracked his first 40.
Yeah.
He's going with the Mickey's. This is in preparation for a show 2.5 hours from now.
Yeah,
so. He's got an OE hat on, too.
Yeah, Gucci got me this hat. He's got the killer OE hat.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a little corduroy going on.
You like it?
It's a trucker hat.
It's breathable.
It's got the breathable mesh in the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you like the trucker hat because it's breathable, so
absolutely.
So the sweat can pour out the back of the hat there. So, we're talking ciders today, right?
Sober, yes.
Semi-sober. I got here early, like at 5, and Chad treated me like a king, and we've been drinking anything I darn well choose, and we've been going through the beers aged in 30-year-old Scotch barrels and things like that.
Yeah, they're strong.
They're good.
Yeah. Some organic IPA was good.
Yeah, the organic IPA, the American IPA won best of show. That's one nice beer. We're all going like, I drink a couple pints of that. Yeah,
absolutely.
And Justin's like, well, how come I
what
don't have
yeah.
Look on his face. Like, what?
So heartbroken. Puppy dog eyes gone.
It's ridiculous.
How about me?
Drinking like an 8-year-old commercial beer I just dug up at the bottom of the fridge.
What about me? Pour some for me.
I got some Mickey's.
Okay. All right. So we're talking cider, and I think, you know, we got one of the foremost experts on that's going to be coming up here. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Gary Audie.
There you go.
One of the great home brewing cider experts out there. We'll be back after this.
Okay, so my double IPA has an ABV of 7.5 and a clarity of brilliant. So that's a plus 8. I pour it.
Sorry, looks like she found it unpalatable.
Ha!
Shut up, Doug.
My creek gets a plus 10 versus girls because it's a fruit beer.
You can't open the bottle, and she walks over to the guy with the Pinot Grigio.
This sucks!
Ugh, I hate it when Greg's the brewmaster.
What's this? Non-Alcoholics Anonymous?
Dude, get out of here. We're in the middle of a brew session.
Is that an actual beer?
Yeah, I crafted it. I don't really use the dice anymore. I'm a 10th level beer nerd.
Are you a 10th level beer nerd? Have you ever been called upon to explain why it's named India Pale Ale? Do you burp Y Yeast 3522 and crap Cascade? Then you're in good company at Northern Brewer. Northern Brewer has all your beer nerd needs, ingredients, equipment, and knowledge 24 hours a day at northernbrewer.com. Plus, fast, cheap shipping, only $7.99 for the contiguous USA. And check out Northern Brewer's huge selection of dorky beer kits, including the Tongue Splitter.
I've got dry hop stuck in my braces.
And the Bourbon Barrel Porter.
Now on tap in the Mose Eisley Cantina.
Make 10th level at northernbrewer.com.
Nico, listen, our lawyers said that we had to do this for 1 hour, and after this, we don't have to talk to each other for 3 more months until the next meeting.
Kids, come on, let's get out of here.
I'm supposed to have more lines. I'm the professional. Hey, it's Sully.
And I'm Nico.
And we opened the 21st Amendment 9 years ago at 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park, to make great beer and have a great time doing it.
That's right, because to us, the 21st Amendment is more than just the right to make beer. It's the right to experiment, to be innovative, and just do things differently. And so now, we're putting our craft beer in cans.
That's right, cans. You can find our world-famous Heller High Watermelon Wheat Beer and Brew Free or Die IPA throughout California and Alaska.
And now it's also available on draft at select accounts in the Bay Area.
So next time you're at your local neighborhood pub or good beer store, be sure to ask for 21st Amendment in cans.
Because everyone likes it in the can.
Tasty Crack Cans.
Tasty Crack Can.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
Okay, we're back. We're talking cider. And we've got on the line a guy, Gary Audie. He is quite the cider expert. He actually was part of the group that wrote the BJCP cider guidelines.
Whoa, nice.
He actually graphs cider apples, berry pears, things like that. He's done about 300 varieties.
Whoa. Wait, he grafted multiple apples together to do different varieties?
Yeah, they take like a stalk of a piece of a tree.
Yeah, exactly.
That does, and then they graft it onto like the base tree just to grow those types of apples.
Nice job.
And then and apparently he specializes in ciders that are similar to those found in Normandy.
Oh, he actually selected a region. Fascinating.
Right. So, and I've heard that he was the guy who gave the talk at the BJCP function in Cincinnati this year at the NHC.
It's going to be a good show.
When I went to find an expert on ciders,
yeah, how'd you do this?
People were whining about the cider show. And they're like, hey, you should do one as good as you did for the mead show. And I'm like, okay, well, yeah, I'd be glad to do that. I asked around. I asked like, 10 people that I know, and 8 of them responded. Out of the 8 that responded, 6 of them said Gary Audie.
They already knew his name.
They're like, oh, you want
the guy.
You want Gary Audie.
Nice.
So we got Gary Audie on the phone. Gary, how you doing?
Hi, fine, thanks. How are you?
Oh, thanks for joining us tonight. Yeah. We really want to do a great cider show for our listeners, and I'm told you are the man.
Yeah, we're going to pick your brain.
Thank you.
So, Gary, Can we start off, one of the things we like to do is start off kind of describing the style that we're talking about. In this case, there's several cider styles, right? Can you give us a brief rundown of the cider styles and what we might expect from at least
sure.
one of them?
Well, overall, the big picture, two cider style, over two styles, standard and specialty. Standard are the ciders and perries that have been made with just apples or pears, no adjuncts, just maybe normal cellar treatments, maybe some, in some cases you might allow some enzymes, things like that ahead of time, but nothing that would really affect the flavor directly. And then the specialty ciders and perries are the ones to which things have been added, adjuncts. It might be just sugar, as in the case of an apple wine, or brown sugar, molasses, grapes, as in the case of a New England style cider, spices, other fruits added for the fruit category. So that's the big picture difference. Then in the standard cider category, you've got five subcategories. You've got common cider, which is cider made from apples that are generally considered to be commonly available, mostly similar to what you might find in the supermarket or at your local market. And then sometimes that's supplemented with wild apples that people might have growing nearby. And there's English cider, which is a drier, more tannic cider, similar to found in England. French cider, also a tannic cider, tends to be sweeter. And then two perry subcategories. There's the common perry, which is made from commonly available pears, and then traditional perry, which is made with pears that have been grown specifically for fermentation. There are a lot of old varieties in England and in France, and they vary quite a bit in acidity and in level of astringency, but they're substantially different in the final product from what you would get from your normal dessert pear.
So, one of the things that I've noticed is, you know, when you start sampling different commercial ciders, even you find that they're widely ranging in kind of tannins and dryness and sweetness and alcohol and you know, flavors and esters and, you know, a lot of different characters that. I think, you know, somebody who doesn't care for cider probably hasn't tried enough of them, hasn't found one that really speaks to them. So, you know, some people like something drier and more tannic. Some people might like something sweeter, more dessert-like, things like that, more apple juice type of ciders. And I think that, you know, that's one of the darn things. If somebody says they don't like cider, they probably haven't tried enough. Is that something that that you find as well, Gary, or am I?
Oh, absolutely, just blowing smoke here? And a lot of cider makers have found that to be true as well. Unfortunately, a lot of people's first exposure to cider has been something that was made by their Uncle Joe or Cousin Fred down in the cellar. It's often been badly made. It may have some really off flavors that only the cider maker himself might like, usually there's some sort of story that goes along with that, with some sort of intense gastrointestinal distress. So
that's
you know, that's many people's initial exposure to cider, and so after that, it's usually forms an unfavorable impression, and you never get past that. And a lot of commercial cider makers who are trying to put out a really nice product find that every day is a struggle to get people to try cider. Steve Wood, who's a cider maker in New Hampshire, very fine cider maker. He describes it as getting people to taste cider is them saying they don't like it, and he practically has to hold their mouths open and force it down their throats to try it before they'll say, "Hey, I like this." So it's definitely not an uncommon phenomenon.
Now, that's an interesting point. If you were to put it into, kind of boil it down to the essence, what makes a good cider, or what makes a great cider? What is it that, you know, really defines, you know, it commonly differentiates an award-winning cider from just any old cider somebody throws together? Well, tough question, I know.
Not really. Cider making in a lot of regards is more closely akin to winemaking than beer making, in that the cider basically is made in the orchard, and the most significant factor by far is the selection of the fruit that's used and the condition that it's in when it's pressed. There are thousands of varieties of apples and many, many, many varieties of pears. Most people aren't even aware of the incredible variety that's out there. And unfortunately, this is a lot different from making beer, in the sense that you may be accustomed to going down to your favorite homebrew shop or ordering online to get the ingredients you need. With cider and perry, it's a different story. It's really a challenge to source a lot of the more interesting types of fruit. And so what happens is the people that really get into it end up, in a lot of cases, either doing a tremendous amount of searching around for growers who grow these varieties, some of these varieties, or in some cases even plant some of the trees themselves, grow them in their own backyards, or find relatives that have a little bit of room for some trees, and they start growing their own fruit.
What are the varieties that you would recommend people look for if they wanted to make cider?
Oh, my. It's really hard to know where to start with that, because there's so many good varieties. If you're talking about an English cider, just dozens of varieties come to mind. A few of them would be Kingston Black, Yarlington Mill, Chisel Jersey, Porter's Perfection, Sweet Cobbin, Foxwell. I mean, these are common. These are varieties that are commonly known in England. They're getting to be known a little bit better in North America, and some of them are also available in Australia as well. In the French ciders, my French is pretty bad, so I have a tough time trying to pronounce a lot of the varieties I'm growing. But a few of them: Fréquent Rouge, Reine de Palme, Jolie Rouge, Girard, Binet Rouge, Bédin. Let's see. Oh, and then in North America, some of the varieties that people are already familiar with probably would be Cortland, Gravenstein. Liberty's a really good disease-resistant variety. Northern Spy, Baldwin. But then there's some historic varieties that have been around longer and that make great cider. Golden Russet, Roxbury Russet, Campfield. Some of them have great names, like Granny Winkle, Harrison.
I see your Granny Winkle.
What's that?
I see your Granny Winkle.
Yeah, you do.
Granny Winkle, yeah. Yeah, it's an old variety, probably from very popular, well-known about 100 years ago, 100, 150 years ago. And then there's some southern varieties, Black Twig, Limber Twig, Smith Cider, and then Hughes Crab, also known as Virginia Crab. There's this tremendous history in Europe, in England, in France, and in North America. A lot of it's been forgotten and now is being rediscovered. So a lot of people are starting to grow these varieties again. You can find nurseries that will grow them, that will sell them. In fact, I don't know if your listeners in North America are interested, but I can name a few growers.
Yeah, please.
Let's see. Well, I don't have any connection with any of these, but in the Finger Lakes region of New York, there's Cummins Nursery. In California, Trees of Antiquity. In the southern U.S., in the Appalachian region, there's Big Horse Creek Farms. And in Virginia, there's Vintage Virginia Apple. And if you punch these all into a search engine, you'll get all the information you need on how to contact them and how to order and find out what they have available. But these four, and these are not the only nurseries, but I just offer these as a starting point. They all ship. So if you're curious and you want to find out how difficult it is to to order your own trees and grow them, that's a great starting point.
So, Gary, you know, is every location in the U.S. and Australia and, you know, around the world, are there people growing great cider apples? Or, you know, are some of our listeners going to need to brew from a kit or something like that, or from an extract of some kind? Or here's another question for you. Is apple juice that you buy in the store, is that like a malt extract to a beer brewer?
That's a good question.
Apple juice that you buy in the store typically is made from concentrate. It'll have some apple juice in it, but it'll also have some water and some type of sugar, whether it's cane sugar or corn sugar. And so it's generally been extended. Sometimes you'll find a premium apple juice that has not been extended like that, but in any case, it will have been stabilized usually by pasteurization. And you have to check the ingredients if you want to ferment it, because if it's had sorbate added, it's kind of a non-starter. You're going to have a really tough time getting any yeast to do anything with it. For most people that don't have their own trees, they're really at the mercy of what they have available in terms of local suppliers. Cider mills in the Northeast and the Midwest. Some parts of the West, upper Midwest, there are orchards, apple orchards, and a lot of places where they'll press the cider. It's getting more and more difficult to get cider that has not been pasteurized or treated with ultraviolet. So if you want to do something with the natural yeast, your choices are a little bit more limited. But if you have a small local cider mill, and you get to know them, a lot of times, if you tell them what you're doing, a lot of times it's not too difficult to get them to set some aside for you when they're pressing. You might want to take some 5-gallon buckets or something like that to them in advance and ask them to set some aside for you. That's one way to get the juice. But unlike beer making supplies, it's not really friendly to shipping through the mail.
So maybe you could walk us through the process. Let's say we want to make 5 gallons of great cider. How do we get started? Where do we go? What are the steps and what are the ingredients and to making a great cider?
Okay. Well, I'll kind of walk it through a couple of ways. One is if you had your own fruit available. Whether you get it from a nearby orchard or you grow it yourself, the first thing you do is you may or may not wash it, depending on the condition it's in. If it's been on the ground where wild animals are grazing these days, a lot of the commercial places will definitely pasteurize that. But if it's something that you've grown yourself, you can just take it home, wash it or not wash it. You can run it through a mill, and that grinds it up into small pieces, maybe a quarter of an inch, a few millimeters in size. And then the milled apples then go into depending on the style, you could use it right away. You can press it right away to get the juice, or you could macerate it several hours or overnight. That's typically something you would do if you're going to be doing a French-style cider. And then after you press it, usually sometimes it's in a screw press, sometimes it's in a hydraulic press. Some people use bladder presses, although you don't usually get a very good yield from that. But you press it, you get the juice, and it may be fairly clear at that point, or it may be very cloudy, depending on the apple variety and the condition of the fruit. And the thing to keep in mind is, if you're pressing your own fruit, the condition is really important. I mean, you want it to be as ripe as possible. This is true of both apples and pears, but especially with pears. After you harvest the fruit, you may want to let it sit around for a while. There are a couple of reasons for that. One is, if you let it sit for a week or 2 weeks, there some evaporation occurs, and it may concentrate the the juice a little bit, so you're going to end up with a higher Brix to start with. And it also helps gives more time for some of the remaining starch in the fruit to convert into sugars. And the other thing is it just gives it more time to ripen and for flavor to develop. And probably the simplest and most effective way of knowing when the right time is to press is one that a very successful cider and perry maker in England used, Tom Oliver uses. And he says he puts his fruit in the shed, and he just checks it out every day. And when he goes and opens up the door to the shed, and he just is just hit by an incredible smell of wonderfully ripe fruit, he knows it's time to press. So at that point, you mill the fruit, you press the fruit. Now you've got your must. Some people will do a wild ferment using the natural yeast. Some people will add a cultured yeast. One thing that's not really well understood by a lot of people when they talk about using the wild yeast, there are some wild yeasts, natural yeasts on the fruit, and historically that's where it starts. But in historic cider making, those natural yeasts end up growing on the pressing equipment, especially on the press cloths. When you're pressing fruit, the milled apples are built into layers called cheeses, and they're wrapped up in cloths. In older times, those cloths were made out of horsehair, or they may have been built up from layers of straw. But the equipment itself, the press equipment, tends to build up cultures of yeast. So even though it's natural or wild yeast, in a sense, it is a cultured yeast. It's each mill basically establishes its own culture. And if you take press equipment that's clean by modern standards of sanitation, like you would find in a typical modern cider mill, what happens is the equipment is so clean you don't have the culture there, so you have a relatively small amount of wild yeast on the fruit, and a relatively high proportion of undesirable bacteria. So a lot of people that try to do a natural fermentation can run into some real problems. It's really more difficult now than it was historically, especially if you don't have access to your own equipment. So, but for people that prefer to use a cultured yeast, or there are a lot of good yeast cultures out there, most serious cider makers that have taken the trouble to source some of their some of the nicer cider apples have a philosophy that they don't want to select a yeast that's going to get in the way of the qualities of the apples. The idea is that you pick a nice blend of apples, and that's the type of cider you're going to get. And you want something that's going to be fairly neutral and not interfere with that. So a lot of times, cider makers will look for just kind of a neutral wine yeast, sometimes a champagne yeast. Usually they'll look for something that will enhance the fruity aspects. Mm. And some of the yeasts that I like are Red Star, Cote Blanc, Premier Cuvée, Lauben 71B, 1122. Mm. If you like a cold start, some of the Saccharomyces bionis strains like Lauben, EC 1118 is good.
It's clean.
And also, let's see, I believe White Labs also has an English cider yeast. And one thing, and that's a nice yeast, but one thing I'd like to point out is that the yeast does not make an English cider. So you may be using an English cider yeast, but basically, it's the fruit selection that's making the fruit selection and fermenting that dry that's making an English style cider.
Well, and I was talking to Chris White about wine yeasts and the yeast that winemakers select or what they might have on their fruit, and it seemed like there's not a whole lot of consideration for the yeast as compared to how a beer brewer would select a yeast for a different beer. And it sounds like you're saying the same thing. It's really mainly about the fruit you select, and kind
absolutely.
Of blending
absolutely.
And selecting
and that's the
fruit.
Fundamental difference between making beer and making cider. You might start with a relatively small number of ingredients in beer and vary the styles by the type of yeast you use. But although you can get that same sort of variety with using different yeasts, a lot of times the fruit is not, it's not really, it doesn't lend itself well to that sort of variety. So for most people that are drinking cider, they're not looking for, they may be looking for some complexity, but they're not looking for something that's got off flavors. And unfortunately, it's all too easy to develop off flavors with cider.
Well, all right, so let's start from the very basics, I guess. We're going to select our apples that we're going to have ground up and then pressed into our cider. And so we want a certain blend, right? We want like a sweet apple. We want a tannic apple. We want an acidic apple, right? Or we want an aromatic apple. Or we want some sort of a blend. What's the typical blend we're looking for? Give us some guidance on how to select our apples, how to make our must.
Okay. The English have a way of looking at apples. They have four categories. They have sweets, sharps, bittersweets, and bitter sharps. The difference between the four categories boils down to acid levels and tannin levels. The bitters, bittersweets, bitter sharps are the apples that have bitter or astringent qualities. And then sweets and sharps. Sweet, the difference is not so much the level of sugar. That's a lot of times a common perception, but it's the difference is the level of acidity. So a sweet would be an apple that has a lower level of acidity, so it gives a different acid sugar balance. And so what you're looking for is you're looking for a combination of these different classes of apples, categories of apples, to give you something that's going to give you a desirable blend of sweetness, acidity, mouthfeel, astringency. Unfortunately, a lot of North American varieties don't have much in the way of astringency. Some of the old time varieties do, but even 100-150 years ago, when there were a lot more North American cider varieties available, they were still generally less tannic than their European counterparts. So that's one basic difference that's always existed between European and North American cider. excuse me. But the as far as specific recipes for combining them, it's not really very simple, because what happens is different varieties will give different qualities when grown under different conditions, and there's also a lot of year-to-year variation. So there may be some varieties that lend themselves well to, for combination. For example, Liberty and Northern Spy. Bellwether cider in Trumansburg, New York, makes a really nice Northern Spy Liberty blend, but they find that they have to tweak their proportions year to year, because the fruit varies so much. So I can't really say add 45% of this and 55% of this. The proportions are going to vary year to year, and so it really does. It is a combination of art and science. And
what about
you? Really
flavor,
have to just Gary? You really just have to get in there and start doing it and seeing how what you start with compares to what you finish with, and develop the skills over time.
Gary, if you're a new cider maker and I was going to go select an apple orchard, would you recommend me going to like two or three apple orchards and tasting them and then maybe blending them from there, just to kind of get an idea what the fruit's going to do for me?
You could do that, or you could, when you go to the cider local cider mills, you can ask, are there any old timers that have been making their hard cider for a while? What do they like to use? If you can find a way to get to know them, go taste and, you know, see if you can meet up with them, taste what they've made, see how you like it. You might think they make a great cider. You might think they make something awful. So you definitely want to try it before you take their advice. And but basically, if you're looking for if you're fortunate enough to find an orchard that does have some of the European varieties of apples, you may not necessarily like what you taste. A lot of these varieties are pretty awful to eat. You taste it and you pretty much want to spit it out. It might be really bitter, and you might think that it would just be awful. Well, I mean, of course, who likes to chew on hops? So, and, you know, you just can't really go by that. You're looking for something that's got enough sugar in it, a gravity of say 1.05 or above, that you can end up with a stable product. If you want to boost it up a little bit higher, I mean, some varieties of apples have a lot more sugar, and so people that are trying to make their blends will usually check the gravity of the different juices if they're going to do their own blending, and check the acidity and look for something that's going to give a reasonable level of acidity also. I'm not really sure that answers your question. It's a case where making cider can be as simple as you want it to be, or it can be as complicated as you want it to be.
Sure.
At the simplest level, you can go to your local cider mill and just get what they've got, and usually they make a pretty good blend. When they're making a sweet cider to sell, they're combining different apples, and they're looking for something that's going to give you a nice level of sweetness and a nice blend of different varieties. And a lot of times you can't go wrong if you use the house blend from a local cider mill. In fact, that's Jeff Carlson. What is he? 2 or 3 times cider maker of the year. That's what he uses most of the time. He uses a local blend, and it's worked very well for him.
You had mentioned ripeness like a lot last few minutes. I know in winemaking, a lot of wineries will look at phenolic ripeness as a way to determine, all right, the fruit's ready, and then they'll cut down that phenolic ripeness later with some water and acid. How important is this phenolic ripeness with a huge quality apple flavor coming through in the end product?
Well, one thing to consider is that with cider, you want to end up with a lot of flavor if you can, but a lot of times, in fact, in most cases, it's not going to be the flavor that you end up with is not going to be anything at all like what you start with. And this is a concept that a lot of people struggle with. When you drink a wine, you don't expect it to taste overtly of fresh grapes. And cider is the same way. From the moment fermentation starts, the fresh apple flavor starts converting into something else, a cidery character, a cidery quality. It's equally desirable, but very, very different. So a lot of times, people that have never had hard cider before and don't really have the experience, when they go to try a hard cider, they're usually very, very surprised. They're expecting it to be to taste of fresh apples, but have a little bit of an alcoholic kick. And usually that's not what it is. You can get a cider that has that sort of quality, but it's not something that you normally get. If you want that fruit quality, generally you have to ferment to dryness and then back sweeten with a fresh juice. In the case of some of the so-called macro ciders or industrials or just mass-produced ciders, they usually do back sweeten with juice or concentrate and may add some other types of flavoring to get that, to approximate that fresh apple flavor. But when you've been tasting cider for a while, what you find is that your palate changes, and you don't really expect to find the fresh fruit flavor. You might enjoy it once in a while as a change, but people over time generally seem to their palates generally seem to evolve towards drier ciders, ciders that that don't really have the fresh flavor, but have a have distinct flavors of apples. And different varieties of cider apples will have flavors that come through, very nice flavors that come through, but they're very different when they're fermented. I'm not really sure that answers your question, though, does it?
Absolutely. What about wild yeast versus choosing a yeast from a homebrew shop? Do you prefer wild over, or do you like to have a controlled yeast?
I find that I use the cultured yeast more now than I used to. If I want complexity, I just let the cider sit longer, and usually over the summer, if you don't use a pasteurized cider, a sweet cider, and you have some wild stuff in there, you're going to get some of the extra complexity anyway, even if you're using a cultured yeast.
Okay.
That's the short answer.
No, it's not real good.
The other short answer is that it's a matter of how much risk you want to assume. If you do wild ferments, you have a much greater likelihood of ending up with off flavors. And there are some things that you can do to limit the likelihood of that occurring. A lot of people that do wild ferments don't add sulfite, and that's actually probably not a very good strategy. You can get a lot of complexity that way, but it may not be the sort of complexity people want to drink. It could be pretty awful. And usually when you're talking about that type of cider, and an old proverb comes to mind. It's I don't know if this is an authentic Chinese proverb or not, but the way I heard it is that every man loves the smell of his own flatulence. And it's kind of like that with home cider makers making wild yeast ferments. I mean, they'll try something, and this is something that I found is true even in my own. When I was first getting started and doing wild ferments, I said, wow, this is really different. I've never tasted anything like this before. And then over time, I realized, well, this isn't actually very good, though. And, you know, your friends
often say that when I fart. Yeah. Oh, this is really different. Maybe that wasn't so good. All right. So
yes. And you generally appreciate your own more than your friends do, you know.
Yeah.
But with cider, people tend to be polite, you know, depending on, you know, how good the friends are. But they may not tell you what they really think.
Judicious use of the Dutch oven. Okay, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to answer some questions from the chat room, and we want you to break the recipe down to, you know, the basic steps that somebody would need to follow to make a great cider. I know that's a difficult thing, not knowing the source of the apples, but give us your best shot at it. We'll be back after this.
Okay, I rolled a 15 and I get a +2 from my yeast starter.
Nope, sorry, you failed your roll. Your beer is infected.
No way!
You had to beat a 24. It's schizosaccharomyces.
This sucks! I just failed versus oxidation! Our party is fracked! Doug's the only one left and his beer is a Berliner Weiss!
What's this? A tea party?
Hey, this is a brew session, man. Get lost!
Is that an actual beer?
Yeah, I crafted it. I don't really use the dice anymore. I'm a 10th level beer nerd.
Are you a 10th level beer nerd? Does your significant other know the difference between an Irish red ale and a Flanders red ale? Do you burp, strizzle, spalt, and fart Y-Yeast 2308? Then you're in good company at Northern Brewer. Northern Brewer has all your beer nerd needs, ingredients, equipment, and knowledge 24 hours a day at northernbrewer.com. Plus, fast, cheap shipping, only $7.99 for the contiguous USA. And check out Northern Brewer's huge selection of dorky beer kits, including the socially awkward Patter's beer and the sci-fi convention. Showstopper number 8. Make 10th level at northernbrewer.com.
What have you gotten out of a vial of White Labs yeast?
WLP001, Cal Ale, baby.
23, Burton Ale.
008, East Coast Ale.
Cal Common, WLP810.
It's gonna be WLP400 with beer.
I got a sweet hoodie for my vial.
Huh?
White Labs, your source for great brewer's yeast, would like to invite all homebrewers to join the White Labs Customer Club. Redeem your empty vials for great White Labs merchandise and products. Free yeast, glassware, t-shirts, baseball caps, sweatshirts, polo shirts, and you won't believe what you'll get for 5,000 vials. Members also receive a newsletter packed with White Labs updates and facts, interviews with professional brewers, brew your own clone recipes, beercook.com recipes, and customer club stories. The White Labs Customer Club. Save your vials and get in the club. White Labs, it's all in the vial.
Williams Brewing is your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Cut hours off your brewing sessions by using one of their 11 varieties of famous Williams malt extract. Their Williams German Pils is mashed with pure German Moravian two-row barley malt for a light blonde color and malty crispness you just can't get from other extracts. Or check out their unique fermenters, draft beer equipment, bottling aids, and more. They even have their own line of precision hydrometers. Go to williamsbrewing.com to browse their vast selection and enter promo code BREW at the order checkout for $5 off your next order over $50. Orders placed by 3 p.m. ship the same day. Again, go to williamsbrewing.com and enter promo code BREW at checkout for $5 off your next order. Brewing is easy the Williams way.
Live. Beer Radio. The Brewing Network.
The Brewcasters.
If you're just starting, don't be discouraged by all this stuff. Exactly. It's so easy.
Just throw it together.
Put some sugar and some water and some yeast in there.
Yeah.
The Brewing Network.
This is The Jameel Show.
All right, we're back with Gary Audie, and he is a master cider maker, teaching us how to brew a great cider. Now, Gary, give us the quick basic recipe. I know people would have to adjust one way or another depending on the source of the apples, but you get X pounds of apples on average to make 5 gallons of must. You pitch, what yeast. You let it go how long, at what fermentation temperatures, and then what adjustments do you make before you package it up?
Okay. Give us that rundown. We'll back it up just a little bit to say that you've got your juice now. You might have gotten it from a local cider mill or pressed it yourself. But before you pitch your yeast, most people will probably want to add some sulfite. And the trick there, and there's a nice trick. You want to add enough to inhibit the undesirable microbial stuff, but you want to let your yeast get a certain dominance. And a nice way to do that is to check your pH of your cider. You know, folks that don't have access to a good pH meter, you can get narrow range test strips. I believe they're available from Northern Brewer. They measure in a range of about 3.0 to 4.2, and based on the level of acidity of the pH in the cider, in the juice, you use a particular amount of sulfite. And I'm not going to give the details here because it can be a little bit intimidating without the visuals, but for folks that want to do that themselves, all the information is available on Andrew Lee's Whittenham Hill Cider Portal. Online, that's www.cider.org.uk. And on that page, there's a link to the Science of Cider Making, and it will give you all the information based on what the pH of your cider is, how many Camden tablets you're going to want to add, or how much stock solution you're going to want to add. It gives instructions on how to make the stock solution. But basically, you're going to throw in a little bit of that sulfite, and that's going to slow everything else down, not the yeast so much. And that's where the yeast starts taking off. In terms of fermentation temperature, most cider makers find that a low temperature works really well. In the high 30s, low 40s, low to mid 40 degree Fahrenheit scale, the colder it is, the slower it is. But the benefit of a slow ferment is that you don't evolve a lot of CO2 gas and blow off the desirable aromatics. So depending on the temperature and the style you're shooting for, it can take weeks, months, or in some cases even a year before you're ready to bottle.
That's fascinating. We were just stunned by that piece of information.
Headlights. Yeah. You're lagering your cider. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's like complete opposite of what we expected.
Yeah. And for folks that are just getting started that want more information, there's some really good books out there. One of them I would recommend would be Andrew Lee's book, Craft Cider Making. It just came out. For those that are looking for it, you can punch in whatever bookseller site you go to, just punch in the ISBN number. It's 978-1-904-87-1378. Ben Watson, another author, just put out his second edition of Cider, Hard and Sweet. Also a very good book. Both of these are good for people that are just getting started. Ben Watson's book, his ISBN number is 978-0-8815-0-819-2. It's a case where either one would do. If you're really into it, you might want to get both. They complement each other very nicely. Andrew Lee's book is a little bit heavier on the science side of it. Ben Watson's it's a little bit geared more towards North American cider, so there's a little more discussion of some of the varieties of apples that you might find.
Do you do any post-ferment adjustments, tannins, acids, anything like that, sweeteners, anything?
What about malolactic?
You can. The problem with doing adjustments to tannins after fermentation is if you add something like grape tannin, there's a lot of distinct flavor that comes with that, and it's generally not perceived to be very desirable. So one way to around that is if you do have access to tannic apple varieties, you can do a tannic fermentation, and then you can blend after you're done. You can take different finished ciders and blend them. Of course, when you do that, before you bottle, you want to let that sit for a while, let the blend sit to make sure that you don't precipitate anything out. Sometimes you'll precipitate out the tannins. And other unexpected things can happen. Hmm. And I do a lot of blending at the end. The biggest single variety I do is an English bittersweet variety called Yarlington Mill, and it just so happens that it's just a wonderful blending apple. So it's if you want to make an English cider, you use that by itself or with a little bit of a slightly more acidic apple to give it a little bit more acid bite. But then if you're looking for a French cider, you could use that and with more of a French fermentation technique. If you're doing a common cider, you could throw that in with your blend, and it'll give you a little bit of astringency, which will really help the mouthfeel.
That's fascinating. So the gist of it is, more blending than adjusting with, any additives or adjuncts you might have.
Yeah,
Justin?
You can also adjust the acidity. Malic acid is available in homebrew shops.
Uh-huh.
Normally, it's not necessary to adjust it, though. I mean, it usually goes the other way in at least in North America. Varieties that you have generally have a fair amount of acidity in them.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you have access to some European varieties, it may not be necessary to adjust that way.
Okay. Justin, questions from the chat room at all?
Yeah, we got a few questions from the chat. Someone wanted to know, If you know anything about Farnham Hill or Kingston Black Apples.
Yeah, Farnham Hill, that's the cider maker I referred to earlier, Steve Wood. They're in Lebanon, New Hampshire. They do make a nice Kingston Black cider. Kingston Black is an English bitter sharp variety, so a little bit more acidity in it. Steve Wood's, Farnham Hill ciders in general, are a little bit higher in acid. Steve goes for a style that's a little more wine-like, and that kind of goes hand in hand with how his ciders are marketed. They tend to be they're sold in some wine shops in New York City. It's considered a premium cider, and as far as I know, Steve Wood is the first person that broke the $25 a bottle mark with his sales prices in New York City.
Good for him. So, how about, would Fuji or other sweeter type of apples work?
They can. Fuji tends to not have a whole lot of flavor after fermentation, but there are some others like Jana Gold. That usually works pretty well. I mentioned Liberty before, Northern Spy. Baldwin is a wonderful old-time apple, been around a long time, and it makes a wonderful cider. If you have an assortment available, it really pays off to do small batches and try different blends. Whatever you have available locally is not necessarily going to be like what someone in another state is going to have. For example, at the Great Lakes International Cider and Perry Competition last month, in the non-commercial division, the best of show went to Claude Jolicoeur of Quebec with a Cortland cider. And Cortland, the apples that Claude uses are just tiny little things that have been grown under the colder, more stressful environment of Quebec. And they develop a surprising amount of flavor. And it turned out to be a wonderful cider. The same apple grown further south could be a real disappointment. Hmm. And that's true with other varieties too. So when you're thinking about if you happen to be thinking about what apples you might want to grow, you have to take that into account. And there are some varieties that grow better in the south than they do in the north.
Okay.
You really need to just check with the growers and do some of your own experimentation and find out what works well for you.
All right. Someone asked if getting unpasteurized juice from the store, does clear versus cloudy make any difference?
It doesn't really make a difference. If it's cloudy from the store, it's usually one of two things. Either it's fresh cider that's been on the shelf a matter of days or a couple of weeks, mm-hmm. or it may be something that's had an enzyme added to it to keep it cloudy longer and give it a longer shelf life, give it the appearance of freshness longer. So it really doesn't matter. I mean, if it's fresh juice, it should work fine, but typically if it's cloudy, that's pectin in suspension, and its pectin is not soluble in alcohol. So as the fermentation proceeds, that's going to drop out of solution eventually, or drop out of suspension. Okay. So typically it'll be clear by the time you're done in any case.
All right. Someone asked about when aging fruit for a couple of days, what temperature should we age them? Does that matter?
That practice actually originated in Europe, and when it was done in England, they would just pile the apples in piles 2 or 3 feet deep outside, and it was whatever temperature you had outside. That's a fairly moderate climate, so it wasn't freezing at night, but I think it's pretty forgiving. It doesn't really matter if it's really warm or really cool, but if it's warmer, ripening is going to occur a lot faster.
Okay. Did you guys talk about yeast starters for this? Someone had asked if a yeast starter is necessary for a cider, and if so, would you make it with apple juice as your base and instead of you know DME like we would a beer starter?
Okay. Are you talking about a cultured yeast starter, or are you talking about something to feed the yeast?
Yeah, more something to feed. Like if we were doing a beer, Jamil and everybody here always recommends taking a vial or a smack pack and putting it into an Erlenmeyer flask of wort to build up the yeast and liven it up prior to pitching. Would we do that with cider yeast as well?
If you're doing a warmer ferment, you probably would want to do that just to ensure the likelihood that you're going to give that yeast the dominance. But if you have, depending on the style, if you're doing a very low temperature ferment, you might not need very much starter. If you're trying to end up with a cider that has residual sweetness, you're going to try to consume some of the critical nutrients, yeast nutrients, out of the juice. And one of the ways you do that is by growing the yeast in the cider. So if you put enough in there to let it grow and then rack it, eventually if all goes well, those critical nutrients might be exhausted and you may end up with some residual sweetness. Now, there's some things you can do to help that along, like the process of keeving, which is a deliberate way of exhausting the nutrients. But some people prefer to have a well-fed yeast, so you may want to use a yeast nutrient. But if you do that, you pretty much have guaranteed that it's going to finish fully dry. And that's typically what happens in most cases anyway. It's just a matter of how quickly it proceeds to full dryness.
Okay. All right, and last question I had come through is talking about putting Brett in a cider or something like a Roselaire blend, something like that, to sour it. Have you any experience with that?
Well, it becomes a matter of personal taste because most... at least in North America, most apples have a fairly substantial amount of acid, so they tend to finish a little bit on the sour side anyway. So anything that adds sourness is probably not going to be to the benefit. In terms of adding Brett, sometimes it could add to the complexity. Malolactic fermentation also, sometimes if you have too much acid, that's one way of reducing the perceived acidity. When you have a lot of malic acid in your cider, and it's too tart, malolactic fermentation will convert that malic acid into lactic acid, which has about half of the effective acidity. And that will smooth out the cider. It does a couple of things, actually. One is it'll reduce the perceived acidity, perceived tartness. But the other side of that is it gives it a roundness, it gives it more complexity, but at the same time it reduces some of the fruitiness. So it's a trade-off.
Okay.
Some people that are looking for a fruity cider probably are not going to want to have that. But if you're aiming for something that's a little bit more complex or maybe a little more European in character, then you might get a little bit more interesting cider that way.
All right, and that's it from the chat, Jamil.
Fantastic! Thank you very much, Gary. We appreciate you spending the time. I know you're East Coast, and this is very late for you, but I think you did an excellent job of covering ciders.
Absolutely.
For us.
Yeah.
I think we all learned considerable amounts. I know here in the studio we're taking notes. John and I both writing down the California supplier for the trees and all that, or for the cider, for the apple trees.
Well, in California, you're probably going to want to check out the Apple Hill area. There's
their
specialty there. They have some really good Gravensteins. So that's going to be your local variety.
Excellent. Nice. Thank you very much. We appreciate your joining us today. And we want to thank our fantastic sponsor, Northern Brewer, for making all this possible. Last 3 years of fine programming, excluding that last cider show we did.
Hey, that was fine, too. But
Actually, most people said, hey, we really enjoyed it, and we accept the fact that you guys deserved one for yourselves.
But
and it was fantastic. And a lot of people didn't say, oh, you don't have to redo it. That's okay. And I think most of the people, they just wanted to see us get back on the air again.
Perfect.
And we'll be back on the air in just a few minutes. If you're listening live, we're going to be back with my good friend Peter Simons from Australia. He's going to talk Australian sparkling and pale ale.
Nice.
It's going to be a great show.
Another guest.
So if you're listening live, hang on. Otherwise, in 2 weeks, you'll get this. Brew strong.
Brew strong.